Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is April 17th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Two upcoming events. We have Lunch with Catherine. It's a joint lunch with Going Organic magazines in Palm Springs on Sunday, May 4th. It's going to be at Two Bunch Palms Resort. You can sign up and buy tickets on the blog if you're in the Southern California area. I hope you can join us. June 28th to 29th, Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization Conference. There's been a lot of activity coming up to that. It's going to be very interesting. You can read all about it at secretspaceprogram.org or more at the blog. Our theme tonight is Geopolitics Squeeze Main Street. The geopolitics of the dollar as reserve currency and all the related trade issues in food and energy in particular means that the U.S. leadership and the G7 leadership continues to squeeze down on Main Street. Energy and food comes from the land, so land is a big issue, and Main Street is more than angry about what is happening with food, energy, and land. Tax time is a time when the squeeze really cuts deep. It's a little bit like the Pillsbury Doughboy. If you squeeze down on one part, it pops out on another. I felt it's very important for you to see the cause and effect between the global and local in this way, particularly as it's impacting you with food and energy. So I wrote a long commentary this week. It's called Musing on the News. I recommend it to you. It's longer than I like to post on the blog, but I think these topics are really important. And the more I can help you see the financial and geopolitical ecosystem and how it's working really as one flow or very interrelated flows would be great. So check it out, Musing on the News commentary for this week. Money and markets, we're watching something very momentous. We are watching, you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of stories that are all integral different bits and pieces of putting together and prototyping the nuts and bolts for a global digital currency that can function at very high speed and very low cost. Go back to 1990, 1989, the wall comes down. 1990, we see the unification of Germany. West Germany, at the time, Germany divided into East and West parts. West Germany, obviously much more economically powerful. People said it would take 10 years for the countries to figure out how to reunify. Happened overnight. West Germany basically said, okay, we're tendering for the with the Deutschmark for the East German currency, and literally, ba-boom, it's one currency, and it melts together. Now we're seeing G7 do the same thing with respect to the global population. Look at the stories. You see, put up a whole bunch of links up on the blog. It's off the homepage now, but if you click back, you'll see it. Facebook and Google's vision for how using drones and satellites and basically U.S. command of the suborbital platform, they intend to create internet access everywhere on the planet. We have Facebook talking about starting a bank. We've talked before about T-Mobile taking deposits. Bitcoin, obviously, know about. Now we have the Iceland coming out with a virtual currency called Aurora, where government has access to all the digital history, complete transparency of where the money's been, what it's done. There's nothing the central bankers would love more. We see the central bankers being very nice about encouraging virtual currency prototyping, and of course, venture capitalists putting big money in it. They wouldn't do that unless they felt they had the green light. We see the defense contractors, as I spoke about last week, spending lots of money for different universities to build curriculum on cyber warfare. That's because the fight over the platform continues to heat up. Credit cards fighting to build low-cost transaction networks in sub-Sahara Africa. I put that story up on the blog earlier. Is either this week or last. And of course, Carl Icahn pushing PayPal to spin out of eBay, figuring he doesn't have to make that happen if he can get his man on the board. And of course, the squabble in space goes on and has reached a new pitch. Again, I talk a fair amount about that in the and using on the news in the commentary. But if we get everyone on mobile devices using currencies on your platform, it's the equivalent of tendering for the whole world population. If you add another 2 billion people to the platform, and remember, we've got almost 2 billion people now on smartphones or tablets or desktops. If you look at the speed at which we're moving people onto smartphones, people who don't have access to water and sewer systems coming in, and what you'll see is that's an enormous number of people to spread the float over, and it's enormous number of people to gain market intelligence on, particularly when the platform that you're moving onto them onto gives you access through media, through entrainment, through all these technologies, including what Charles Hugh Smith and I discuss as the soft weapons. So you're talking, you know, if you can add 2 billion people to your float, I assure you that can keep the dollar going for a long, long, long time. So the race is on to build the infrastructure, the hardware, the software for the digital currency system. And if you look across all these stories, what you're seeing is literally the equivalent of a once-in-a-century gold rush because, you know, as the Rothschild said, give me control of the currency and I care not. I care not what the political system of the country is. Okay, the dance between the U.S. and Russia, whereby the two of them and their allies whack up the Ukraine, continues. Again, you can read more about it in the commentary, musing on the news. Big, deep question that I ask, what weaponry does Russia have? They have something. They're if you look at the sort of presence that they've managed to pull off, it indicates to me whether it's, does Russia have EMP? I mean, they certainly have a nuclear arsenal, but you need something a little bit more practical to push the way they're pushing. Following, we see again, as I spoke, I think last week, NASA dumps the Russians out of the cooperation in space. Then we see the deputy prime minister say Russians are planning a base on the moon. China has now followed this week with the president saying they intend to move, the Chinese intend to move forward with militarization of space. And part of this is the command, not just of the Earth, but as more and more moves up into the suborbital platforms, satellites, other industry, the effort to control and protect yourself in that platform is absolutely critical. Article I posted up on the blog this week, will the Pentagon secret space plane ever return to Earth? We've now had a nearly 500-day mission of the Pentagon putting a drone up in space, and it refuses to say what it's doing and when it's going to come back. I wonder the extent to which it's connected to some of the events going on in the South China Sea and Ukraine and other hotspots around the world. Part of the squabble in the Ukraine is food prices. The Ukraine is a huge gas transmission point and is one of the great bread baskets of the world. And that bread basket is getting more valuable the further away we get from Chernobyl. So it's not surprising that we're seeing rising food prices and the effect of that story everywhere. Multiple stories up on the blog this week. Russia rejects GMOs, will grow organic food instead. Putin has found a great way of going at politics with the war on GMOs. Another great story that I really encourage you to read called Agrihoods, about more and more community developments instead of organizing around a golf course, organizing around the organic food farm. It's the ultimate in luxury benefits these days. Ronald McDonald of McDonald's Corporation has been retired, and one of the new faces being promoted is a guy named Farmer Dirk, who is a lettuce farmer that supplies McDonald's with lettuce. And just goes to show you that, the consumer is beginning to send the message back loud and clear. There are reports from all over the country coming in from subscribers and our readers of more people doing gardens or farms, or farmers and ranchers going organic. And I think it's all part of the market moving in a way that is finally making small agriculture businesses more economic. I know we were questioning here in Hickory Valley whether we're going to do a garden this year, and watching the price of fresh vegetables, we've just said, we have to do a garden. There's no doubt about it. 2014 and 2016 elections. I talk about them in the commentary, musing on the news. We spoke several weeks ago where I said I thought that the Bushes and Clintons had made a deal to basically get rid of each other's contenders so that they have a clean sort of sailing. And sure enough, we've seen them beat up on Chris Christie. Now they're beating up very hard on Andrew Cuomo, with the Washington Post this week coming out with an article saying the Democrats should dump Cuomo in the re-election for governor in New York. A lot of this is cleaning house. If Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton are going to run for president, they and their networks have plenty of garbage, and they need to clean house and put up a fresh face. I think getting rid of Chris Christie is getting rid of competition. Getting rid of Andrew Cuomo means that Hillary can protect herself from a lot of the garbage in the Clinton administration. Cuomo's a pretty dirty guy and was one of the key frontmen on engineering the housing bubble. So he's dragging a lot of baggage, and I'm sure he's coming into a presidential election, he's going to want his pound of flesh. Jeb Bush got on the news last week and talked about how Mexicans trying to come into the country illegally were engaged in an act of love. It was a very smart thing for him to do. And it started to sort of jerk the Republican dialogue into something a little bit less small-minded and fearful than what they've been doing with illegal immigration. So we'll see how that plays out. Princeton study that's caught a lot of notice. The U.S., they've been able to prove with rigorous academic research that the U.S. is an oligarchy, not a democracy. Now, we all knew that. But there's something about a group of Princeton academics coming out and writing it all up and publishing it in an academic journal. This one is Perspectives on Politics. It's kind of funny. At the same time, if you get tired of watching the sort of spin meisters of the 2014 or 2016 election here in the United States, it always helps to listen to a real leader speak reality. So I put up a video of Michael Tellinger, who's running in the Ubuntu Party elections in South Africa this year. Talk about the real issues. It's quite amazing to watch somebody just take it back to ground zero. Please read this article. It's up on the blog. Social Security and Treasury target taxpayers for their parents' decades-old debt. I sent it to an attorney I know who wrote back and said, I cannot express how frightening this is. I am without words. A woman is having her IRS refund grabbed because Social Security is taking the position that her parents, her mother was overpaid Social Security. So jumping liabilities generation to generation, I can't imagine. If you really want to be amazed, check out our science and technology section this week. Some of the stories, there's a bump on one of the rings on Saturn. They call it the birth of a new Saturn moon. Because of Norm Berglund's book, The Rings of Saturn, and his theory that there were plasma spaceships docked in the rings of Saturn, I found it to be a bit of an interesting story. The UN says renewables nuclear must triple to save the climate. More fear-mongering from the UN. Artificial blood will be manufactured in factories. I kid you not, you've got to read it. And finally, John McAfee on the heartbleed bug gives us a lot more to worry about. It's a little bit scary. And finally, in food and health, another article, some nanoparticles commonly added to consumer products can significantly damage DNA. I think GMO is not the worst thing that we need to worry about. Nanoparticles is probably something worse. But it's another reason to get radical about supporting your local organic farmers and gardeners in your food supply. Our hero this week, watching the Bundy Ranch events in Arizona and watching the involvement of state legislatures, we're watching sort of coming top down from Mr. Global, a real hit on state and local legislators and a real hit on pension funds. And that's because if you look at the reengineering of the government budget or the economy, the opportunity is in local real estate and local business. And sort of organization of those markets and the integration of new technology. And the last thing Mr. Global wants is to have to deal with the state and local legislators and the pension funds, because teamed up together, they can control. And so if you're Mr. Global and you want to move in on that action and make money on it, you want them out of the way. You want them cornered. You want them financing you so that you own it instead of you having to come in and partner with them, and they control and they get a huge piece of the action because they're the local guys. And so you're watching, you know, the best defense is a good offense. So you're watching an attack on the pension funds, and you're watching an attack on the state and local guys so that Mr. Global wants control. So he's trying to get these guys cornered. Sure enough, on the Bundy Ranch situation, we have state legislators come out and take a stand. And that's, you know, taking that kind of stand against the machine is very dangerous. And the more who do it, then the easier it is for everyone. So as our hero, I wanted to mention Senator Frank Nicely from Tennessee, who's one of my favorite senators here. He's someone that Franklin Sanders has worked with a lot. He's a farmer, and he's done a tremendous amount to temper the use of the food safety regulations to put farmers out of business. And he's someone that many people think here we can go to get something intelligent done. But he's certainly someone who's in a very effective way work to mitigate the impact of that machine. And so, Senator Frank Nicely, thank you. And thank you to all the state legislators who are doing everything they can to sort of not let the global squeeze roll people on the ground. Tapeworm of the week, we're going to have one of those this week, is Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, donating $50 million for gun control. I just love it when the guys who sit in New York make a lot of money and then decide to spend it telling us what to do. Ask Catherine. We got a lot of questions this week. Dear Catherine, I read with great interest the article you recently posted from Rambus Chartology, making their case in predicting what would become a total collapse in the value of precious metals. This made me realize that with so many people believing in recent years that the collapse of the dollar was imminent, and still hasn't happened, that many precious metal investors may finally decide that it's time to begin unloading their metals. What are your thoughts on what was mentioned with Rambus? The article was really about the possibility of another leg down before the primary trend reasserted. So it was not about the collapse of precious metals. It was simply the fact that the author in question, a very good article, did not see the primary trend reasserting in the near future, but figured that there's a very good chance of one more leg down. I agree with that. It's what Franklin and I talked about during the precious metals market report. If that does happen, again, it's very important you not sell your core position. If you have an investment position as opposed to a core position, you just want to be careful whether you want to ride it down through that. But it's absolutely a distinct possibility. The question is, this summer, will we break the 1200 line? Anybody's guess is as good as mine. What is good news is a Gallup poll released, I think, today shows that a survey of Americans about their favorite investments, 30% favor real estate, 24%, this is tied for stocks and gold. Gold's come down since the high in 2011, and stocks have ridden as the S&P and the developed world markets have improved. Bonds are in the basement, and given the outlook on interest rates, we're going to have a lot of money moving out of the bond market or out of bank deposits, and they're going to have to go into risk assets. Real estate, of course, for many people, being their favorite local investment. What's interesting about this is if you look across all of these asset classes, real estate, stocks, and gold, what the survey is saying is people want to invest in what's called risk assets. So they're walking away from bonds and from bank deposits. Now, if interest rates should rise, that can always change around, but it's a good sign when people want to invest in real assets, and which I think this shows. So I think, you know, if anything, what we're doing is we're building a new base. If you look at the ownership of coins, it's become much more widely distributed during this consolidation since 2011. And it means that there's going to be a much bigger and much wider base for the precious metals market. when the primary trend reasserts, which I believe it will, I give it about 80% chance. Is it possible we're in a bear market for a long, long time? Yes, anything's possible. But again, I expect the primary trend to reassert. And part of it is, if you look at where Mr. Global wants to go with currencies, there's going to be too much demand, particularly in China and India, for gold, a gold-based currency. So if you want to get everybody on a digital currency, you better come up with a virtual currency that can be combined with gold. And it's, you know, if anything, it's going to be the most unbelievable fiat currency in the world. Dear Catherine, in addition to the movie Second Opinion that you're reviewing, and this was last week, and Let's Get the Movies, I also recommend the movies Brzezinski and Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, which are outstanding movies on curing cancer, too. Both of these movies are available on DVD and can be seen on YouTube also. Yes, I've seen the first, which is made by the same producer who made Second Opinion, which is the movie we reviewed last week. It's on the suppression of information about Laetrile. I haven't seen Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, and I look forward to looking at that. In addition, last year in the Salieri Report, John Rappaport recommended the book Politics and Healing by Daniel Haley. And after reading this book, because of John's recommendation, I can honestly say it's the most important book I've read. I've gotten it, but I haven't read it yet. I clearly need to. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for all you and your staff's hard work in bringing the Salieri Report to us. I have two questions. First, you said that 3D printing looks to be a major trend for the future. Do you have any companies in this space that you consider worthy investments? I'm not allowed to give investment advice as a regulated investment advisor. I have to make all recommendations like that within a regulatory relationship, which I cannot do on the Salieri Report. If you look at the study that we published on 3D, we did a Salieri Report on 3D printing. It goes through many of the major companies and not-for-profit organizations in lots of the different spaces within 3D printer, from hardware to software. And if you want to get names of companies, you know, many searches on the internet are there, will give you sort of an idea of who's doing what. I do think there are companies in this area that are good investments right now. If you look at the stocks, the strong growth stocks, they've been trading off significantly. And in addition, we're long overdue for a correction. So I would be careful when you buy, you know, because with these stocks, when they run up, they can run up quite high and then trade off. They're very volatile. So take a look at their histories before you decide what you do. But I would be very careful about when you buy. And of course, you want one of the ones that's going to hang in for a long time or get bought up. Second, you have said that nothing happens without the metastructure allowing it to happen. With that in mind, why do you think they are allowing a program like Coast to Coast with George Norrie to exist and reach such a large audience? It's a combination of reasons. One is that Art Bell built that show up, and then it was sort of taken over and corporatized. If you look at the people who own Coast to Coast, it's basically sort of Harvard endowment and related network money, I think, that's controlling the corporate investment of Premier Radio, which is basically the owner of the show. It was purchased from a group in Texas many years ago. What you'll see is allowing that network to exist as a way of letting off steam by keeping it late at night and adding the paranormal and the UFO. You try and keep it sort of marginalized, or that worked for a while. But the other thing is, if you look at who Coast to Coast has a lot of hours of content to provide, and if you look at also gets into the stream, you know, it's people who are promoting, you know, sort of the official story in a variety of different ways. So it's a very wide basket. There's a mix of stuff. And the very interesting thing about the Coast to Coast audience is they are very discerning, very intelligent, and their attitude is, you know, no problem. I know how to get what I want. I know how to listen, pick, filter, you know, bring it all on, and I'll filter out the good stuff and ignore the other stuff. And so, you know, so it's kind of a compromise between the Mr. Global and everybody else. And if anything, it's a two-way communication device. So, you know, I find Coast to Coast to be a very useful radio show. What I didn't understand when I first got on Coast to Coast was the incredible importance of the UFO phenomena to what was happening in communities and politics. And it was something that Coast to Coast educated me to. I will tell you that if you look at the producers of Coast to Coast, given the flow of information they've handled over the years, it's quite extraordinary, their knowledge of what's going on in the world and their sort of interaction with millions of people all over the world who listen and follow them. So it's a very rich flow, and I must tell you, it's a wonderful audience. I love the people who listen to Coast to Coast, and I'm always amazed, no matter where I am or what I'm doing, when I discover who in the world is listening to Coast to Coast. Another question, what do you think of the divest Monsanto effort? I think it's a, you know, I always believe that any opportunity we have to align our time, our money, our attention with our values is good. I haven't looked closely at that group and I don't know anything about them, but I do think one of the ways to deal with someone like Monsanto is clearly communicate through the marketplace. What will happen to gold and silver if war occurs? My expectation in most war-like situations is the price will fall, will be very deflationary in the short run for gold and silver. What will happen to other markets' holdings if war occurs? Depends. Generally, what you'll see is money rush into the dollar and the treasury. So people look for safe havens, but it really depends on what kind of war you're talking about. Next question. Is it possible there could be a subscriber's luncheon during the time you're in San Mateo in June? Great idea. We're going to take a look at that. Thank you for that idea. There's going to be a lot going on that weekend, but it would be very fun to do if we could. Next question. Good gosh, Catherine, I just realized that you did know Michael Rupert and you knew him well. I'm very sorry, Catherine, that you lost a friend. The person writing is referring to the fact that Michael Rupert, who was the proprietor of a website called Collapse, former LA policeman and narcotics investigator, committed suicide this last week. In 1998, there were three people really concerned with or illuminating drug trafficking in communities. One was Mike Rupert, who has now committed suicide. One was Gary Webb, who was said to commit suicide, but I believe was assassinated. And the third was me. And I, when informed of Mike's suicide, it really sort of inspired me to sit down and think about the last 10 years. Mike and I had stopped collaborating many years ago, and I've steered clear of him for many years because I found his behavior to be erratic, and I lost trust in him in a variety of different ways. Looking back, I realized that, there were many people who helped me and many things that went right for me so that I didn't end up assassinated like Gary Webb or depressed like Mike Rupert. And listening to the reports of his death really got me to take stock and say, I have a lot to be grateful for. And one of the things I'm most grateful for is for the subscribers who provide me and my team a revenue flow in exchange for telling them the truth. It's a huge blessing to be able to work at what we do. And I'm extremely grateful for that. And I thank you for your support. So it's a time to take stock and say, there, but for the grace of God, go I. Another question to add something positive. I'm so looking forward to the Secret Space Conference. That one is the conference, at the end of June with Catherine, Dr. Farrell, Richard Dolan, etc. They go on to describe reasons why you can see this comment posted at the blog. Thank you for your positive attitude that keeps us going and learning. God bless you. Thank you. A comment related to the Bundy standoff. Wanting to know, could you please comment on the BLM standoff in Nevada? This cuts through so many of your themes. It's time for A comprehensive annual financial reports equivalent regards the wealth of the world. What do the extraction industries know that we do not? See my commentary musings on the news. I do comment on the Bundy situation. The questioner goes on. For example, I remember a story of the shuttle images mapping forests in the U.S. Forest Service assessing from the data that companies had to be harvesting more lumber than they'd been accounting for in permits and fees. There must also be a dispute about unpaid rent for grazing rights, but it also has a huge distraction factor. It dragged in a lot of people, and Stuart R. at Oath Keepers commented on the presence of active serving office holders. As with the Social Security clawback of benefits from a child decades later, in one sense, it is the dying sector of the economy, just desperately trying to hang on. There must be suitors for the land who want to pay more, and the BLM is trying to obtain that. Is this not an example along the lines of not paying your taxes or filing properly? You're just breaking the law. The situation at Bundy is more complex, and you can spin stories on either side. I would have to dig down very deep and spend a lot of time to really sit down and understand exactly what's going on and who has right on which parts of their side. I do think it's important to understand that the federal government can use environmental laws in a situation like this and the application of rents to try and assert a sovereignty that they really don't have and to make life very expensive and ultimately make the targeted party look wrong. Remember, we are providing them with tax money. They're not providing us with tax money. So we're basically paying them to do things that eat up our time and make it easy for them to sort of outfight us. Now, I don't know all the particulars in this situation. I don't think the people involved are part of a dying economy. If they die, we die. Our freedom depends on an independent food supply, which depends on independent ranchers, farmers, and food distributors. And if their water and land can be destroyed and taken and centralized under central control, then, you know, we're all part of the dying economy. So I think we have a tendency to make groups like this look like they're part of one small group. But if you look at the issues going on at the heart of the matter, this is all of us. This is really about the law. If you look at the economics that is causing the U.S. government to assert control over great swaths of land, whether it's energy, whether it's food, whether it's the Agenda 21 issues, all of those economic drives and political drives are driven by the need for money. And it's clear we've been harvesting the whole economy for decades. I, for one, think the way to fight back on this is to assert demands for the missing money. There's $4 trillion missing from the federal government. There is a refusal to produce audited financial statements as required by law. There is clear noncompliance with the Constitution. To me, if you want to really fight these things, what you're going to have to do is go to court and demand an escrow locally for federal tax money on the theory that we have an obligation to assert authority over the money because the money is being spent outside the Constitution and the law. So I think there's some really jump-the-curve legal strategies to use, and rather than being many little groups picked off, we're going to have to get deeply into the money. And another thing I talk about in the musing on the news commentary is the importance and the incredible opportunity, rather than fighting over these issues in a very ugly way, let's get down into the dirt and start re-engineering the flows of funds in places, because there's great wealth to be created. And, you know, it's the old Tina Turner question. We can do this nice or rough. What's happening at the Bundy Ranch is rough, and there's a nice way to do it. Let's go to the movies. I wanted you to point out the Robert De Niro's 2006 spy movie, The Good Shepherd. It's a fictionalized description of the birth of counterintelligence in the Central Intelligence Agency. It gives you a view of the historical roots of today's soft warfare machine. It's quite well done, Matt Damon starring. And it gives you a sense of how, you know, sort of creepy that machinery at the root of it was. And it's a critical machinery to protecting the dollar. As I was writing the musings commentary, one of the subscribers sent in a list of coups that the essentially the CIA in America with the help of G7 has engineered since 1953. It's a very long list. The Ukraine is only the latest one on the list. And sure enough, we have in Yahoo News this week up on the blog, Ukraine's ousted president has accused the CIA of being behind the new Ukrainian government. You don't say. Anyway, the Good Shepherd, if you want a sense of the tradition there, or sort of the cultural roots of the soft weapons, it's a good one to watch. I just have to say something about a movie that's so bad I want to protect you from it. I had a subscriber write in and say they'd watched The Wolf of Wall Street and had to give up after 45 minutes. I've been meaning to watch it, so I got it on Netflix. It took 10 minutes before I gave up. It's the biggest bunch of hooey. It's if you ever want to see an example of the promotion of corruption and incompetence as a cover story, there it is. It bears very little resemblance to reality, and you know it's that's one to avoid. Our interview this week is with Charles Hugh Smith, a writer and blogger who I have great respect for. I think he does a marvelous job of trying to integrate a wide range of material and always bringing it back to what we can do. I used a quote on the blog this week from Charles, we have to solve our own problems. I wanted to talk with him about soft weapons because, he's far from, he's much more an integrator of everything than someone who's an expert on covert operations, including soft weapons. But I felt he was a perfect person to talk about because he is so good at bringing these things down to an intimate level. But it was a delightful conversation. He's a writer and author that I recommend to you highly. He's got a new book out about how to sort of get a job and generate an income despite everything that's going on. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but knowing his work, I bet it's very useful. Okay, that's it for this week in closing. Coming up, we have, I joined John Rappaport for the report next week. We've been bringing up mind control so much, I thought, well, let's go in. I've done an introduction to mind control. It's in the archive. I recommend it to you, but I thought it would be great to go through some more with John because that is a topic that most people really don't have a good background on. There's some good books, good movies. John and I went through them. But that is clearly a topic. The mind control in this population, the population we live in, is more significant. If everybody's going to get a mobile device, it's only going to go up. So it really does help you to navigate the world to understand that mind control is real. It really happens. Then May 1st, our lovely Dr. Joseph Farrell will be joining me. We'll be talking about his book, The Financial Vipers of Venice, and sort of the deep issues at the reengineering of the financial system, given this rollout of the digital currency and the infrastructure it operates on. I think that's a very appropriate conversation for us to be having now. And then a great quarterly equity report with Chuck. I've just gone through his slides with him. It's going to be very good. That's on May 8th. I will be heading out to Arkansas and the Ozarks after the report next week, and then on to Palm Springs, where we'll have the lunch on May 4th, and then out to California, where I'll be at the Secret Space Conference on June 28th and 29th. So until next week with John Rappaport, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.